Hi, good morning. I'm Tanya Johnson. As Lori said, I work in the Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion at CDC as a health communication specialist. And today I'd like to talk to you about the challenges we face when it comes to post-licensure vaccine safety communications. As Stephanie so eloquently described our overarching vaccine safety messages, I will just show you this slide and move on, but just reiterate that these are our fundamental vaccine safety communication messages that we try to convey with each of our materials or products that we put out. And just wanted to put these in context too, to some of the things I'll be talking about later. These are much more, I would say, less interesting than some of the more controversial topics that you hear about from the media and from the concerned public. So it makes our job communicating these basic messages even more difficult. Stephanie also touched on the current factors that contribute to vaccine safety concerns, and I won't go through them all again, but did just want to touch on a couple that weren't mentioned, and that is that the increasing number of states that allow for personal belief exemptions right now. The concern is that this may lead to further questioning of vaccine safety, therefore making it acceptable for some parents to choose not to vaccinate. The importance of this just cannot be stressed enough, that intentionally unvaccinated children put other children at risk for vaccine-preventable diseases. So this is something in our vaccine safety messaging that we are trying to overcome. In addition, as Stephanie mentioned, healthcare providers have challenges finding the time to provide comprehensive health information to their patients. And vaccines and their safety are just two of a host of topics that they deal with, sometimes with every patient visit. We're working closely with our colleagues in NCIRD to provide healthcare providers with resources to make their job in providing vaccine safety communications information easier. In addition, we've all heard in this room about some recent high-profile vaccine-preventable disease outbreaks, including measles and mumps. But we have to remember that few people in the general public, including providers, have visible reminders of why we vaccinate. They rarely see cases of vaccine-preventable diseases because of the historical success of our routine vaccination program. These are just a few of the images and ads that consumers may see when researching vaccine information online. The two on the left were ads placed by the advocacy group Generation Rescue in several magazines and national newspapers with very large circulations. The article in Wired magazine that you'll see at the bottom with the baby and the big fear message was actually factually accurate and very well written and researched and also well received. However, it didn't have the same wide readership that other targeted vaccine safety messages may reach, like some of these shown above. For the next few slides, I would like to touch on some of the specific concerns that we face as vaccine safety communicators on a daily basis. And this slide shows the concern about the increasing number of recommended vaccines, simultaneous administration of vaccinations, combination vaccines, and the difference in the two. As many of you know, simultaneous vaccinations would include getting a number of shots during the same visit, and a combination vaccine is one in which there are several antigens within the vaccine, for instance, the MMR vaccine or the DTaP vaccine. And I'd also like to point out here that there is no evidence that giving multiple vaccines at the same time is harmful. In fact, multiple vaccines work with the immune system to boost it, not against it, to overload it. And that's an important message that I'd like to leave you with. Lori described in detail the concerns about vaccine ingredients. This is also something that we deal with on a daily basis. And I'd just like to reiterate what Lori said, is that vaccine ingredients are there for a very specific and important reason, and that they have been used successfully and safely for years, and in some cases, multiple decades. The concern about vaccines and autism remains prevalent among parents, the public, and certain media. We all recognize that there's much research to be done about autism and autism spectrum disorders to understand, treat, and prevent this complicated and difficult disease. But what we do know is that there have been 19 well-designed and conducted scientific studies published on vaccines and autism, none of which support an association between vaccines and autism. The 1998 Andrew Wakefield study, the results of which claimed an association between vaccines and autism, was retracted by Lancet in February of this year. In addition to the concerns I've just discussed, there's also been a dramatic increase in the number of vaccines licensed and recommended for use in the U.S. As you can see from the slide, the number of recommended vaccines increased from 16 in 1990 to 70 in 2009. This number will only continue to increase as we develop new vaccines, and therefore the amount and complexity of vaccine safety data that we will be responsible for monitoring will continue to increase. And this will make our jobs as communicators even more challenging. And now I'd like to start by discussing three vaccines and the challenges that we have in communicating the safety messages. The first I'd like to talk about is MMR and MMRV vaccines, which vaccinate against measles, mumps, rubella, and in the case of MMRV, and it has the addition of varicella vaccine. As with all licensed vaccines, serious adverse events following MMR and MMRV vaccines are rare. I just wanted to point that out up front. And that getting the MMR vaccine and MMRV vaccine is much safer than, of course, getting measles, mumps, or rubella. Children who receive the MMR vaccine are more likely to have febrile seizure 8 to 14 days after vaccination than children who are not vaccinated at all. Although febrile seizures can be frightening for the child's caregivers, most are harmless and children have a full recovery and have no lasting side effects. But I should reiterate that the effect of febrile seizures can stay with parents long term, even throughout their lifetime. In the case of MMRV, in comparison to preliminary results from CDC's MMRV vaccine study among children 12 to 23 months old found that the rate of febrile seizures 7 to 10 days after vaccination was about 2 times higher in children who received MMRV vaccine. To put this in perspective, the rate was 9 per 100,000 children vaccinated with MMRV vaccine versus 4 per 100,000 children vaccinated with MMR and varicella vaccines as separate vaccines. And I mean that in MMR as one vaccine and varicella as the second. So these are very complicated messages to get across, not only on a website or in a fact sheet, but definitely complicated to communicate one-on-one if you're a provider trying to explain this to a patient. So what CDC has done is, you can see here at the bottom, sorry, it's a little small, a reference to our website and some materials that we've provided specifically for clinicians to help you communicate with your patients about the risks of MMRV and febrile seizures versus the risk of febrile seizures with MMR and V as separate doses. Next, I'd like to talk about HPV vaccine. Since Gardasil was first licensed, as Lori said, in 2006 and recommended for use in females, this vaccine has received significant media attention, as I'm sure you all know. Media attention is focused on the vaccine safety and its recommendation for use in females as young as 11 years old to prevent a sexually transmitted infection that can lead to cervical cancer. Communicating Gardasil safety has been an ongoing challenge. Parents report that they want to make sure the vaccine will be effective long term, and that there are concerns that they hear in the media about the safety of the vaccine from individual cases are addressed. In the coming years, we will be challenged in communicating not only the same messages for the Gardasil vaccine, but its new recommendation to prevent genital warts in males, and also to communicate the safety of the new Cervarix vaccine, which has been recommended for use in females. I've been told I need to speed it up, so I'm going to try to rush through the remainder of my slides. The 2009 H1N1 vaccine was a challenge for our vaccine safety communications office and for the other members of the panel, in that we were basing the safety profile on our historic experience with similar vaccines, that is the seasonal flu vaccines. Results of our safety monitoring were expected and desired as soon as the vaccine was distributed, and we had an additional challenge of the vaccine being recommended for what we consider some of our most vulnerable populations: pregnant women, young children, teenagers. In the upcoming flu season, we're expecting challenges with the seasonal flu vaccine because it will also include the 2009 H1N1 strain. And the public will expect our vaccine safety messages to address the safety of the 2009 H1N1 vaccine. However, these safety studies are still ongoing. Over the past 2 years, our Immunization Safety Office has worked to broaden the audience for its vaccine safety messages. We've done this through a variety of strategies that include the following: our vaccine safety website, education materials for providers, patients, and parents, outreach to partners on an ongoing basis, including vaccine advocacy organizations, outreach to media, outreach and training for our VAERS program, which Pam will discuss with you. We also have vaccine safety coordinators in each state and 12 regions throughout the U.S. that we provide regular information to on vaccine safety topics. And we are reaching out through social media formats, including our new Safe Healthcare blog on cdc.gov, podcasts on our website, and we are taking advantage of Facebook and Twitter for quick communications of vaccine safety messages. In addition, we have an innovative collaboration with partners, including Medscape, where we are able to provide video of expert commentary by some of our subject matter experts. And in the case of H1N1, we had an SME specifically talking to clinicians about pregnancy and the H1N1 vaccine, and this was viewed by, I believe, over 50,000 individuals who watched the video in its entirety. So this has been a very successful partnership, and we will be continuing to look for new ways to provide outreach on vaccine safety issues. I'd just like to acknowledge my fallen colleagues, and thank you so much, and I'll turn it over to Pam Bryant.